Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of October 4th, 2015. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing today, D.R.?
Good, how are you doing?
Very well, very well. D.R., as always, it's a pleasure to have you here. So, lots of news all around the various kinds of topics this week. One of the interesting things that came up was an interview with, I guess, the prototypical climate hawk, right? A guy named Chris Hayes on MSNBC TV station, cable channel, interviewed the former vice president of the United States, former nearly president of the United States, an Emmy Award winner and a Nobel Prize winner, Mr. Al Gore, right?
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, what did Chris Hayes and Al Gore talk about?
It was a great interview that went about 20 minutes that occurred in Florida because Gore is doing his climate reality training in Florida. So Chris Hayes interviewed him on site, basically, and they basically discussed the process of the progress of clean energy and the sort of political resistance to it and how that resistance may be weakening. The most interesting takeaway from the interview was that it was the first time, thanks to Gore's remarks on cable television, it had been acknowledged the Exxon story that Inside Climate News broke about Exxon knowing the risks of climate change going all the way back to the 1970s, and Gore being the first person to finally mention that on cable. This was after Brad Friedman, the investigative journalist in California, mentioned the issue of how odd it was that Chris Hayes, who's covered these stories, didn't mention the Exxon story prior to that point, but yet it finally gets mentioned through Gore raising the issue. So good on him for doing so, finally.
So let's just reset everybody. So the Exxon story came out a couple of weeks ago where a website called Inside Climate News published a investigative journalism piece which basically proved that Exxon knew in 1977 or so that climate change was real and would threaten, was real enough to threaten Exxon's business, and that they needed to be seriously thinking about it. And that a few years later, in the mid 1980s, Exxon went dark on the issue, started to deny, and basically put themselves in the position of the tobacco companies that denied the cancer link for many decades. And of course, what that raises is the question of, is Exxon liable to the same kind of litigation that went against the tobacco people? But DR, I think the most important point from your perspective is that none of that important information made it onto TV. Right? It was not splashed anywhere. It was not like no one followed up with more investigations. It was basically dropped like the proverbial hot potato, right?
Exactly. And as Brad Friedman has noted, one of the reasons why is the intensity of ExxonMobil's advertising on cable news. Speaking of Chris Hayes, there was a great piece by the California-based writer Douglas Craig, who attended the event, the climate reality training in Florida. And he talked about a discussion panel that Chris Hayes had in the hours prior to the Gore interview, in which he discussed, and which, according to Craig, quote, Hayes admitted that one reason why the various media outlets don't cover global climate change comes down to dollars and cents. Covering the fact that we are destroying our children's future is not good for ratings, and the same goes for those in the print media, he and others on the panel acknowledged, which begs the question, according to Craig, does the media not cover global climate change because the public doesn't care, or does the public not care because they're not properly educated and informed by money-driven media companies? And it's a very interesting question in the context of Exxon's advertising and the role Exxon's advertising plays in how much this issue is covered or not covered.
Well, and I mean, certainly if you watch MSNBC, there are perpetual advertisements for the American Petroleum Institute, right? I mean, there's a huge funder. And quite
Exactly.
honestly, I mean, global warming may be a downer, but I'm getting kind of depressed by all of the poor people trying to walk across Europe now. I mean, that's depressing
Exactly.
news story if there ever was one, and it's much
Exactly.
more immediate, right?
And it raises the issue, do you not cover an issue just because it's considered depressing? I'm sure back in the 1980s, people considered AIDS a depressing issue, but you couldn't ignore it just because it was depressing, right?
Right. I think that, I mean, much as I admire Chris Hayes, it's somewhat disingenuous to say that, it blamed the audience when, in fact, I think that the, I mean, money talks, right? And it's hard to, if your biggest advertisers in the oil industry, guys, then you don't want to knock them. And that's the same argument you and I have made about the Koch brothers funding WGBH here, the public
Exactly.
TV station here in,
And
the Boston area.
the irony that has to be noted that Gore, when he ran Current TV, didn't accept any fossil fuel advertising, and yet makes this remark about Exxon on a network that does accept such advertising. How interesting is that?
Well, I think that, I mean, I guess we were speaking before that Gore was making the point that renewable energy industry is taking on a sort of a juggernaut role. It's almost unstoppable at this point.
Exactly. He talked about this sort of desperate attempt by the utilities to try to sabotage solar and to try to tax solar and to try to do everything it can to discourage people from trying to go off the grid. Yet people are still going off the grid, and yet this the power of the renewable energy industry is just an unstoppable force that's going to keep building more and more momentum, basically.
And that momentum, though, as we said, is based on the fact that the price of this stuff keeps dropping, right? Solar panels and wind turbine energy is, if not already, very close to what I think they call it parity, right?
Yes.
The point where it does you're as cheap as the fossil fuel energy by making your electricity in a clean way. I mean, that changes things dramatically, right?
Exactly. This changes everything, so to speak.
So tell me, that kind of progress in the renewable energy technology is a threat to utilities and is a threat to the fossil fuel industry generally. But I also saw a report that came out recently that said the divestment movement, it basically talked about the divestment movement as being having more consequence than anyone would have anticipated even a few short years ago, right?
Exactly, that now that there's been over I believe $2.6 trillion of money has been pulled out of the fossil fuel industry, which has just been a testament to how much the divestment movement has grown in just under 3 years. And to think about, everybody compares it to the South Africa divestment movement and how that took about a decade to really get going, and for this to gain so much momentum in less than a half a decade, that tells you something.
Well, and I think, I mean, there was some other story. I mean, so there's an additional story, but the divestment movement is a morally based, ethically based movement that says you should not own or profit from this destructive stuff. I think there is a parallel threat to the fossil fuel industry that says human beings, we cannot burn all the fuel, all the fossil fuel that Exxon already owns. So Exxon is overvalued. And I think there's a purely financial threat that the
Exactly.
big money guys are saying, hey, wait a minute, we can see the future better than Exxon can, and we know that they are not worth as much as they think they are. And that also begins to crumble these big corporations, right?
Exactly. That these stranded assets, Al Gore's talked about that before, about stranded assets that you cannot exploit because you'll essentially exploit yourself.
Right.
So as a
I mean, the
result,
stranded assets being if, say, Royal Dutch Shell had discovered tons of oil in the Chukchi Sea, but then could never extract it, it's worthless, right? If they were.
Exactly.
And so that's why these guys are in deep trouble, I think.
Exactly.
So, again, there's all kinds of stories floating around. The other big thing that happened this week, well, maybe it's not as big as Al Gore, but there was a letter f coordinated by an organization called Ceres, Ceres. It's a big group here in Boston. It's a corporate environmental responsibility and ethics something, right? That they're about corporate ethics. And they put together a letter to Congress, right? And who did the letter come from, dear?
The letter came from executives from Mars Incorporated, Kellogg's, General Mills, Stonyfield Yogurt, Danone Yogurt, Nestle, Ben & Jerry's, Unilever, and New Belgium Brewing, also the Clif Bar and Company, all encouraging Congress to finally take action to curb carbon pollution. And they're basically making it clear that, you know, continued carbon pollution is a threat to their business. Obviously, you know, if you don't have a healthy planet, you don't have the resources you need to operate a food company. So as a result, they need Congress to finally step up and to finally act. And you know, let's face it, members of Congress have to eat too. So I mentioned to a friend of mine, if you remember the controversy from years ago where Representative Walter Jones renamed French fries Freedom Fries in the context of the Iraq War. There are no Freedom Fries if you can't grow any potatoes, can you? So they might want to take action as a result of that if they want to have their Freedom Fries and their Freedom Toast.
Well, I think that this kind of letter gives the lie, or at least wakes people up to the fact that it's not clear that sort of business opposes environmental action, right? Mm-hmm. I think the national, I don't know, the many national lobbying organizations want you to believe that business and corporate world is unified in opposing any action by the federal government. I think that's just not true. I think there's a lot of corporations and companies that want to see some kind of stability established and a program put in place.
Mm-hmm. It goes back to a controversy from about 7 years ago where there was a writer by the name of Jim Garrity for National Review Online, and he was basically trying to say that, you know, it's not wise for conservative politicians to keep promoting the denialism, because corporate America recognized the risks, and there's no reason for conservative politicians to have a position on this issue that was not incongruous, that was basically at odds with corporate America's acceptance of the science and corporate America's recognition of the need to take action. Mm-hmm. So once again, it shows you that with the exception of certain fossil fuel industries, because even some members of big oil like Shell, despite its obsession with drilling, you know, Shell recognizes that this is an issue. BP recognizes officially that it's an issue. You know, you have all these private sector entities all basically saying, yes, our businesses are going to be affected by this. You have
there was a thing that said Microsoft yes. Corporation has an internal carbon tax, so they're already taking into account the carbon tax that they expect to be implemented, so that they'll be ready for it when it comes, right?
And for all these people who talk about the wonders of the free market and the need to let the free market survive, how can the free market survive if the environment is damaged? Remember, as the late Senator Gaylord Nelson said, that, you know, a healthy economy is the wholly owned subsidiary of a healthy environment, not the other way around. So these corporations, these companies recognize that they need to have not just a stable business climate, they need a stable ecological climate in order to create the jobs and to create the prosperity that you know, powers our world. So therefore they're saying, please, you know, help us help ourselves. Basically, we need strong limits on carbon pollution in order to be able to literally do our jobs. So all the people who talk about, you know, there's the outgoing Speaker of the House who always talked about, where are the jobs? Well, there are not going to be any jobs if you can't work as a result of carbon pollution, basically.
Well, DR, there you go. We've killed another 12 and a half minutes. I hope no one objects to what we've said. I hope it was enlightening to people. If you want to check up most of the links to what we talked about, although we covered a lot of ground today, will be on the website. It's at massclimateaction.net/blog. Right? You can go there. You can find the show there. You can also go to our Facebook page. It's /massclimateaction. There'll be a link which will bring you to the blog, which will bring you to SoundCloud, and you can listen to the show there. Please tell your friends about us. Share us so that they can hear as well. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or you can find us on iTunes. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.